All right. We are in chapter 43, and we're going to get through 43 and 44 tonight. And next week, we're going to get through 45 and 46. And then Jonathan will be taking 47, because I will be in Nashville the week after that. So, we got to stay on schedule, either that, or Jonathan has to read a lot of names. So, or he makes y'all read a lot of names in 46. Chapter 43 follows up on the events of chapter 42, and chapter 42's events summarized are... Okay. So, chapter 43. Now the famine was severe in the land, and when they had eaten the grain that they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, "Go again and buy us a little food." But Judah said to him, "The man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.' If you will send our brother with us, we will go down and buy food, but if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" What did Judah and the brothers refuse to do if Jacob would not send Benjamin to Egypt?
They refused to go.
They refused to go. It's going to be pointless to expend the resources and opportunity and time to go if we don't get to see the person we've got to see in order to buy food. And he said, "We're not going to see his face unless Benjamin is with us."
Was that an unusual question to follow the patriarch of the family?
Probably fairly unusual. In that day and time, in that situation. But Judah just makes it clear that, and bear in mind that Jacob is 130 years old at the time. You know, it's not like a 20-year-old talking to his 50-year-old dad. It's Judah who's probably only in his 60s-ish, somewhere around there. Well, probably not quite 60, probably 50s, early 50s, talking to his 150-year-old or 130-year-old father and saying, "Not going, not unless you send Benjamin, because it... no point."
Well, it may not have been the point, but that, I don't think that was the real reason. They were afraid to go back.
Well, I think there was some fear in it, simply because they knew that they were tempting fate if they attempted to go back and not meet Joseph's demands.
That's right, because they had already claimed them spies.
Right, exactly. And so if they show back up without the proof that they're not spies, then it's just confirmation that they are. So that's a good point. Yeah, well, I agree. Edwin Jones, in making comments on verse 2, that when they had eaten the grain that they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, "Go again and buy us a little food." He said, "When the grain brought back from Egypt runs out, Judah comes forth with a plan to ensure the safety of Benjamin. His plan would have been more attractive at this stage than Reuben's previous attempt at everybody, or as everybody, including Benjamin, was now subject to starvation." Just as I read that, as I was studying, it just made me think about the idea of escalation. Remember when they returned and came back initially, and Simeon was in prison, and they reported to their father, Reuben attempted to get Jacob to allow Benjamin to return back with him, to turn right back around and go back to Egypt to get Simeon out of prison. And Jacob refused. And Reuben even offered, basically, the life of my two sons if I don't bring Jacob back home, or bring Benjamin back. If he didn't bring Benjamin back to Jacob, he said this is forfeit in his stead. But Jacob refused. Now, Jacob is going to entertain that which he would not even entertain before, and he's actually going to do that which he wouldn't have entertained before because of the escalation of the situation. And the reality is, what isn't considered as even an option at the beginning of a crisis often will be acted upon, or at least considered, as the crisis continues. How many times do we see that even in our modern day and times with the government and with businesses? What ideas are absolutely rejected when a crisis first happens, as that crisis is in a year, 2 years later, the crisis is still going on? Those ideas that were rejected at the beginning that everybody thought were ludicrous start to be considered as options. As the crisis escalates, what is not considered an option before now begins to appear as a possibility. You see that with people when it comes to sin. Something they would have never done at one point, when they hit the wall and the crisis continues and they can't get over whatever the problem is, whether it be financial or whether it be physical or whatever, they start to allow in their minds the possibility of something they wouldn't have done before. People who steal, who wouldn't have stolen had they not ended up in a hard situation and not been able to overcome it a different way, start to entertain the idea of getting out of it the easy way by stealing instead of paying their debts. You see, when a crisis happens and it escalates and it continues, people start to look at options they wouldn't have considered otherwise. And that's what Jacob will ultimately do here. He will go against his better judgment. He will go against what he wants because he has no choice. If he refuses, not only does the rest of the family die, but so does Benjamin. So he really has no alternative at this point.
The food that Jacob sent with his sons down to Egypt, the nuts and what had, I don't know what it was that something that could not sustain them, or did they get that from somewhere else? Or was bread just such a staple part of their life that they had to have?
It seems as though that there were things that would grow, but not sufficient to sustain them. And not sufficient to sustain anyone in the land.
Nutritiously,
abundantly. While these things may still have grown during the famine, you're not going to get the same amount of harvest even of these things that you would have during years of normal crops. And so, no, they would not have been sufficient to sustain not only the lives of the people, but the lives of the animals. Because if you don't have grain, you don't have animals.
Grain was maybe more or less for that more stuff for the animals than for the people.
I think it's in that day and time, it's going to be all the way around. It's going to be a necessity no matter.
I really hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. Yeah. But animals would have figured in as well that you don't have grain, you don't have feed.
You don't have bread.
You don't have bread, and your your flocks and your sheep and your other cattle and your donkeys and your whatever, keep going down the list. They don't live without the grain. So he says, we'll go down and buy food. Verse 6, Israel said, "Why did you treat me so badly as to tell the man that you had another brother?" All right, he turns it around on Judah and says, "This is all your fault because you told him that you had another brother." They replied, and you can tell he's not just looking at Judah singularly, but the sons collectively replied, "The man questioned us carefully as about ourselves and our kindred, saying, 'Is your father still alive? Do you have another brother?' What we told him in answer to these questions, could we in any way know that he would say, 'Bring your brother down'?" And Judah said to Israel, his father, "Send the boy with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you and also our little ones." So Judah's point is, if we don't go, and specifically if Benjamin doesn't go, then it doesn't matter. We're all dead anyway. Verse 9, I will be a pledge of his safety. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice. So the idea here that Judah's pointing out is we came back with sufficient supplies at the time, but as the famine has continued, at this stage we would have been back to Egypt twice now had you let Benjamin go. That shows you the point of true desperation they're actually at. Because they would have already been on their second trip back based upon the need of supplies had Benjamin been allowed to go with them when they came back initially. And so the crucial reality of the situation is Benjamin goes or that's it. Verse 11, then their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags and carry a present down to the man, a little balm and a little honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Take double the money with you, carry back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of the sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take also your brother and arise, go again to the man. May God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, and may he send back your other brother and Benjamin. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. So, in this, you see Jacob finally saying, go. But here's how you're going to go. You're going to take not only the initial money that you took and was returned, but you're going to take the payment for the second amount and then double that and then take this gift to this man, this person who's in charge of the fruits, the choice fruits, the rich fruits of the land. Now, this would have been significant simply because not only it's a gesture of recognizing his position, but it's also the reality, especially in that day and time, that you could get things from one country and one territory you couldn't get from another. And so they would have been considered a delicacy, most likely, in Egypt, because they would probably have been things that Egypt wouldn't have necessarily grown, depending on climate differences. And, you know, we know historically that the land of Palestine was such that it produced a great deal of choice products by way of food and such. You remember that even from when Israel and the nation comes into the land and spies it out in the Book of Numbers. So they go down, or he tells them they can go down. He says, may God Almighty grant you mercy. But in saying that, he concludes that statement with, as for me, if I'm bereaved of my children, I'm bereaved. Have you noticed that through this whole thing, almost all of Jacob's statements are still all about himself? You've taken my son from me. All of this has come upon me. If Benjamin, you know, is lost, then I'm going to suffer this, and I'm going to...
He's still not showing his love towards the other son. In all exactly. His statements, he's still not showing love. It's still Jacob and Benjamin. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's not them.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what's interesting is if you look back in verse 8, Judah talks about the little ones. It's not even just the fact that there are 10 other sons anymore. 10 sons with their wives and Jacob's grandchildren and possibly even great-grandchildren. I mean, with his oldest, some with the brothers would have been. So he's not even thinking about the 10 sons. He's just not thinking about them. He's also not even thinking about their families and what it's going to do to them.
Right.
His mother probably will.
You could say that. So notice as he goes along, or as we go along, he sends them down. So verse 15. So the men took that present and Benjamin. They took double money in their hand and arose and went down to Egypt. And they stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, "Take these men to my home and slaughter an animal and make ready, for these men will dine with me at noon." Then the man did as Joseph ordered, and the man brought the men into Joseph's house. Now the men were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house, and they said, "It is because of the money which was returned in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may make a case against us and seize us to take us as slaves with our donkeys." So they get to Egypt. They're there in Benjamin. And when Joseph sees who? Benjamin. He says to his steward, "Take these men to my home." He plans a meal for them, sets the provisions in order with his servants, and leaves it in a servant's hands. But none of this is communicated to them. They're just told, "You're going to Joseph's home." Certainly wasn't referenced as Joseph. He would have been referenced by either his title or his Egyptian name. But that being said, they believe, here we were hoping things were going to work out, and now we can't just come get grain, get our brother, and go home. Now we're going to his house. This means trouble. As is usually the case, when things start going bad, we just quite often look at some situations and think when it starts raining, it's pouring, and assume that it's going to be bad, whether it's actually bad or not. We jump the gun and presume the outcome of the situation, and quite often make things harder on ourselves than they have to be. Verse 19, when they drew near to the steward of Joseph's house, they talked with him at the door of the house and said, "O sir, we indeed came down the first time to buy food, but it happened when we came to the encampment that we opened our sacks, and there each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight, so we have brought it back in our hand. And we have brought down other money in our hands to buy food. We do not know who put the money in our sacks." So they attempt to head off the situation, thinking, "Oh no, it's because the money was in our sacks." They think we're thieves and spies. It's not bad enough we're spies, now we're thieves too. So notice, man, I wish I could get this out of my throat, whatever it is. As they're going, they draw near to whose house? Nope. At least not in the New King James. They drew near to the steward of Joseph's house. It seems as though from the text that it's the steward's house that they're passing by. That's based upon looking at the text in a multiple translations. At least that's how it seems.
But what about 18 where it says that they were taking to Joseph's house?
Right.
Allowed to leave Joseph's house and walk around freely?
No, it seems as though as they're going to Joseph's house.
Maybe they were neighbors.
Well, the King James says, "And they came near to the steward of Joseph's house."
Okay. So it may be that I took it the wrong way.
Mine says they went up to the steward of Joseph's house.
Okay. So, you know, I've been wrong once before. Mark it up to 2 times. Yeah, there was the other time I thought I was wrong, but I wasn't. I was mistaken.
It's hard to get home,
Lynn. Not when you're married. So the steward says to them, as they try to explain the situation away that doesn't exist, he says, verse 23, "Peace be with you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I have your money." Then he brought Simeon out to them. Somebody tell me what the original situation was as far as the money getting in their sacks the last time.
Didn't Joseph have the steward put it back in their sacks?
Joseph commanded the steward to put the money back in the sacks. Now the steward tells them, this is a gift from your God. I have your money. How's that true? Or let me ask it this way. How could it be true?
The quote, paid in full by Joseph, because Joseph said to give the money back. The idea that it was paid, but yet Joseph kind of, quote, refunded the money, so to speak. And so it was truly taken care of. The money had been properly
handled. So it could be that Joseph paid for their grain previously and then sent their money home. Now, it is interesting, though, that this statement the steward makes, your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sack, indicates, as Joseph's steward, that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was known in Egypt because of Joseph. This makes, even looking forward, because here's Joseph second in control in Egypt, and here's his steward, basically the right-hand man of the second person in charge of the whole nation, saying and indicating he knows who the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is. He knows who the God of these individuals are. And the statement as it's phrased indicates that God is known because of Joseph in Egypt, which also indicates to you when you move forward to the time where God brings judgment on Egypt with the plagues and against Pharaoh, God's not unjust to have brought judgment. They should have known who he was. They should have recognized who he was. In that statement, there came a Pharaoh who knew not Joseph. It's more than just not knowing Joseph. It was a Pharaoh who didn't recognize the God of Joseph. And would not acknowledge him.
That don't be afraid sound like what angels tell people, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we know the steward's not an angel.
Right.
But is what
language. Certainly. So then he brings Simeon out to them. So the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet, and he gave their donkeys feed. So then they made the present ready for Joseph coming at noon, for they heard that they would eat bread there. And when Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand into the house and bowed down before him to the earth. So there's a period of time between the time they arrive and the time they're going to eat. They take that opportunity to prepare the present, i.e. get it unpacked, get it set up where it would look and appear to be that which it is, a bountiful present. And when he arrives, they bring him the present which was in their hand in the house and bowed down before him to the earth. They asked him about, then he asked them about their well-being and said, "Is your father well? The old man of whom you spoke, is he still alive?" And they answered, "Your servant, our father, is in good health. He is still alive." And they bowed their heads down and prostrated themselves. Then he lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, "Is this your younger brother of whom you spoke to me?" And he said, "God be gracious to you, my son." So they come in, and what happens again in connection back to chapter 37?
They bow down.
And they bow down again. And they call themselves his
servants.
When do you think that Joseph recognized the fact that all of this was in God's plan?
Well, at some point before he said it.
It says 42 verse 9, and Joseph remembered the dreams which he dreamed of them.
Yeah, in verse 8 it said Joseph knew his brothers, but they knew him not. But it makes you wonder if he knew it beforehand.
Well, but you consider he's been gone longer than he was alive when he was with them.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been gone for almost 20 years.
How many brothers are there? There's got to be some resemblance.
It could be, but yeah, except that none of them were from the same mother he was.
Yeah.
And none of them were from the same mother, and he's not even speaking Hebrew to them. So, I mean, he's speaking Egyptian.
I think about how many years have transpired and how you know we can change in a certain amount of time. Add some facial hair, maybe.
The other reality is they probably didn't get that close to him.
They probably were kept, because
they start off being accused of being spies. You don't let the spies come right up to the second in charge of the whole nation. Start thinking about it.
Plus, I guess the mere possibility of that actually.
Absolutely. It's not even.
It would be so far fetched for them, even they wouldn't even begin to pop.
Right.
He might look like he was. No way.
Right. So.
What does cross-strated mean?
Bowed. Basically, face to the ground, all the way face down. So he says to Benjamin, "God be gracious to you, my son." Just another indication that Joseph's not afraid or hesitant to mention God, and therefore that's probably been the case the whole time. Now his heart yearned for his brother, so Joseph made haste and sought somewhere to weep, and he went into his chamber and wept there. Then he washed his face and came out. He restrained himself and said, "Serve the bread." So they set him a place by himself, and they by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat food with the Hebrews, for that was an abomination to the Egyptians. So they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth, and the men looked in astonishment at one another. Then he took servings to them from before him, but Benjamin's serving was 5 times as much as any of theirs. So they drank and were merry with him. So he begins to weep. When will Joseph weep during this visit by his brothers? Okay. After he sees Benjamin. He returns out, tells them to serve the bread. Basically, the places are set, but they're in seemingly different rooms entirely. Because the Egyptians wouldn't eat with Hebrews because they were an abomination. Why were they an abomination? Because they were shepherds. Because their occupation made them an abomination to the Egyptians. It seems as though maybe that Joseph is eating separately from them because of his position and not necessarily connection to him being Hebrew, because the brothers don't draw that conclusion at all. But they are set in their places according to what? By age, by birth order. Now, the idea is Joseph would have had no way of knowing that, except one of two ways. Either he knew somehow, or Simeon told him, but Simeon seems to be as surprised as the rest of them, which means Simeon hadn't told him. So this is something that takes them entirely by surprise. Chapter 44, the quick version.
In 7 minutes?
Yep. He commanded the steward of his house. Oh, who received 5 times the portion of his brothers?
Benjamin.
Why?
Because his brother, my buddy,
he was full brother.
Okay. I think it may not have been also. Maybe. Might also have had something to do with he's going to test them again and see if they're willing to stick their necks out for the favored one again. All right, chapter 44. He commanded the steward of his house, saying, "Fill the men's sacks with food and as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of the sack." So they get the food back, as much as they can take, and the money back. "Also, put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his grain money." So he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. As soon as the morning dawned, the men were sent away, they and their donkeys. When they had gone out of the city and were not yet far off, Joseph said to his steward, "Get up, follow the men. And when you overtake them, say to them, 'Why have you repaid evil for good?'" Joseph's going to test them again. He's going to make sure. Why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one which my Lord, from which my Lord drinks, and with which he indeed practices divination? You have done evil in so doing. Question. Does the text indicate that Joseph was, quote, practicing divination, i.e. pagan astrology, witchcraft, etc., and that he was sinning by so doing? Because you notice in verses 5 and 6, it's what he tells them to say. Verse 6, it's what he says. And verse 15, when they come back, he says, do you not know, he says to the brothers, do you not know that I certainly practice divination? So did he?
He could, because it could be done in such a way, as far as the way that Egyptians looked at it, that he truly was a...
Diviner. Okay.
Because God was with him, whereas the Egyptians would have practiced it falsely because their gods were false.
Okay. The indication seems to be, and then Alice can make her statement, that he's using the Egyptian perspective. And not that, or he's attributing something to this cup that's not actually the case, but it's his excuse to make it seem more important than just being a silver cup.
And we know Joseph yeah. wouldn't have lied.
Right.
So either way, Joseph is telling the truth about this situation.
Right. So the indication, there's no indication that he's sinning. He's insisted even from the very beginning when he's in prison that God's the one who gives the interpretation of dreams and not him. And so there's never an indication he's believed himself to have that ability. So either he's speaking of it from the Egyptian perspective as they considered him one who practiced divination, or he's simply attributing something to the cup for the sake of scaring them and bringing them back. Alice?
Well, I was going to ask, could there have been a connection with him being able to interpret dreams and that had been in the past that had been beneficial to a lot of people?
Right. Yeah, they would have recognized him as one who would have had that ability and that power.
Could you compare that or use that with divination?
Well, the divination is explicitly something from the pagan idea of using astrology and other things to divine future happening.
That's what divination is, though, is it's telling of the future, which Joseph was able to do through the interpretation of the dream by God.
Right.
I mean, didn't Pharaoh originally call for his magician?
Yeah. Magicians, yes.
Sorcerers, whoever. So,
yes.
I mean, it appears he's on that same
right. level. They would have considered him the same thing. All right. So, just by way of the questions, in whose sack was Joseph's silver cup found? All right. Notice what they said. They said, with whomever your servant, verse 9, is found, let him die, and we also will become my Lord's slaves. They insisted, listen, we brought back the money that you sent with us the first time. Why would we do this? And they were so confident of it, they said, whoever you find the cup with, kill him, and the rest of us will become your slaves. That's how confident they were that this hadn't happened. He replies, now also let it be according to your words, with whom it is found shall be my slave, but you shall be blameless. Then each man speedily let down the sack to the ground, and each opened the sack. So he searched. He began with the oldest and left off with the youngest. The cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes, and each man loaded his donkey and returned to the city. Now, previously, there was a favored son whom they hated because he was favored and because he was special, and they sold him into slavery. This time, there's a possibility Benjamin goes into slavery. They all pack up and go back. They're willing to all enter slavery for Benjamin's sake. There's the change Joseph is waiting to see. Okay?
When they tear their clothes, do they sew them back later?
I've often wondered that. Do they have a lot of torn and re-sewn clothes?
There's a lot of tearing of clothes going on.
All right. Which brother intercedes for Benjamin before Joseph?
Judah.
Who was Judah's primary concern during his plea? Was it himself, Benjamin, or Jacob?
Jacob.
All right, go through and read verses 18 through 34. It is truly one of the most heartfelt impassioned pleas that you read in all of Scripture. And you'll notice by the beginning of chapter 45 how it will move Joseph, the attitude that Judah exhibits and his actions. All right? Chapter 45 and 46 next week.